On the record. On News Talk.
With Pinergy. Supplying energy with insight to forward-thinking Irish businesses.
We also learn that twins and a father and son were among 13 people charged with public order offences last night after anti-lockdown demonstrations in Dublin turned violent. That story is the main one on the front page of the Sunday Times this morning. Gardaí attacked in clashes with lockdown protesters. Violent clashes involving anti-lockdown protesters breaking out in Dublin city centre yesterday. Fireworks and other missiles thrown at Gardaí. We also learn on the front page of the Sunday Times that conspiracy fans are jubilant at yesterday's demo success, apparently. Groups such as Yellow Vest Ireland and the right-wing National Party were promoting the protest on their social media protests. Speakers at the event criticised the mainstream media. Some carried signs knocking RTE and other news outlets. And the front page of the Irish Mail on Sunday this morning: Gardaí hunt COVID thugs, 23 held after Gardaí were attacked with fireworks at the Grafton Street riot. Four officers injured after a tense face-off with the Legal Street gathering. One of those has been hospitalised. Anti-lockdown thugs attacked the whole of society, say Garda representatives. Let's talk a little bit about that with our first guest this morning, the Taoiseach, leader of Fine Gael and Minister for Enterprise, Trade and Employment, Leo Varadkar. Taoiseach, good morning.
Morning, Gavin.
We are somewhat constrained in what we can say about yesterday's event because there are now criminal charges pending against 13 people. But what do you say to those who perhaps went along thinking that it was just going to be a peaceful protest, or those who think that they are just simply fed up with lockdown and who wanted to air their frustrations about it?
Well, as you say, we are constrained in what we can say because there are Garda investigations underway at the moment in relation to some of the people who took part in that protest. But, you know, Gavin, it wasn't a protest, it was a riot. And there's no excuse for using that kind of violence to advance a political cause, no matter what that cause is. And I think we're just lucky that somebody didn't get seriously injured or killed. And I have to say, I think the Gardaí did an amazing job. They took control of the situation really quickly, got control of the situation very quickly thereafter. And, you know, the fact that we saw people being brought to court that very night was a really good example of very swift and very effective policing. So I think they deserve our thanks once again for keeping us safe. But, you know, in a pandemic, really, there shouldn't be any protests. You know, I'm a great believer in free speech and nobody ever wants to ban protests, but you know, gatherings of this nature are not allowed in a level 5 lockdown, and while social distance protests are possible, this certainly wasn't that.
Well, be that as it may, and whether they're in breach of the regulations right now is obviously pretty clear, but you describe this as not being a protest but a riot. There are plenty of people who went in probably because they didn't intend to take part in any riot, they just simply wanted to air their grievances. So what do you do about a culture in which those who do go in with very you know, fair, very, you know, totally above board intentions of merely just stating their frustrations with the current state of play end up being manipulated by those who may have other nefarious goals in mind?
Yeah, I'm not sure what you can do in that scenario. You know, there are all sorts of protest movements down the years, and it isn't unusual for any protest movement to have a, you know, a sinister fringe, which will have a different agenda, and that agenda might go beyond the issue at hand, and those people might turn to violence. And, you know, we saw that many times in recent years in Ireland, unfortunately. I'm not really sure what you can do about that, to be honest, Gavin, to answer your question.
Is there anything the government can do to counter some of the misinformation? Because I'm sure you've seen the quote in Mark Tighe's report from the protest at the GPO this morning. Two people who were there protesting against RTE, they said that 9,000 people had gone missing in Ireland last year. They were asked how this was linked to RTE, and they outlined a conspiracy, and I'm quoting here from Mark Tighe's article for anyone who hasn't read it this morning. They quoted a conspiracy theory which involved babies being killed and harvested for adrenochrome, which is used to keep RTE celebrities looking young, while the corpses are buried under the National Children's Hospital. The two claimed the government were basically paedophiles and that there were videos explaining this on a website known for hosting far-right speakers and conspiracy theories. Is the state, is the media, is society doing enough to disabuse people of conspiracies like that?
Well, yeah, that's pretty bonkers, isn't it? And not far off the kind of QAnon stuff that we've seen, you know, in America and in other parts of the world, which bizarrely gained a certain degree of traction. Again, I'm reluctant to do anything that would involve infringing free speech, but I think there are things that can be done. You know, certainly with the Online Safety Commissioner being established, it will be possible to order platforms to take down harmful content if they don't do that already, and anything that incites violence, in my view, is harmful content. And I think there's responsibility on some of the social media platforms as well to do the exact same. But if often this stuff, as you know, isn't hosted on the major platforms that are household names. There are some fringe ones out there as well that aren't regulated in Ireland, of course. But I think one thing we do need to push back on, all of us, those of us in the media, those of us in politics, is this whole kind of extreme populism, which has very similar characteristics. You know, it's the same concepts. It's the, you know, elite versus the people or masses, you know, the 1% kind of conspiracy theories. It's emotion over facts. It's putting forward simple solutions to complex problems. It's delegitimization of the mainstream media. It's support for conspiracy theories, and it's tolerance for violent protests in certain circumstances. And, you know, I think we all need to push back on that. And unfortunately, that appears in mainstream politics a bit as well, and it needs to be countered, in my view.
Even though a lot of this was organized on messaging apps, which, as you say, aren't kind of centrally regulated that way, should there be a greater responsibility on some of the more household social networks, which did allow themselves be used as a vehicle to advertise what was, in effect, an illegal gathering? Should they have more of a responsibility to prohibit any content like that?
But yes, is the short answer. And, you know, a lot of these platforms have content monitors. You know, they have systems to take down content that's against their own policies or content that is harmful. And I think, you know, anything that, you know, encourages people to engage in violence, encourages people to do things that might spread the virus, for example, that's the kind of harmful content that they should remove. And we're not just going to leave it to them to do it, by the way. That's why we're bringing forward legislation under the leadership of Minister Catherine Martin to put in place an online safety commissioner to require platforms to take down this kind of content in certain circumstances, you know, not just this type of content, but also, you know, things that would encourage, you know, people to self-harm, things that would encourage people to, I suppose I won't go through a list of things on a Sunday morning, but that there are many forms of harmful content, and that's going to be done by legislation. At the same time, though, you know, we do need to bear in mind free speech, and one person's regulation what one person may describe as being hate speech, for example, or incitement to violence, is what another person may describe as free speech. And we always need to be a little bit careful in that space, you know.
You can understand how, you know, 12 months ago we would never have thought we'd be in a world like this where you'd have to have such restrictions on mass gatherings. There are a lot of people, there's a clear underlying good health reason why you can't have mass gatherings right now. But what do you say to people who do think that it is an unnecessary, almost totalitarian approach to public health?
Well, unfortunately, that's not true. You know, Gavin, infringing on people's civil liberties and taking away personal freedom goes against all of my political instincts. And yet I was in this government and the last government that's had to do it. And as Minister for Enterprise, Trade and Employment, forcing businesses to close and not allowing people to go to work, again, goes against all of my instincts. But this is an emergency. This is a global health emergency and a national emergency. And that requires emergency actions that should only be in place for us so long as necessary. But they are necessary at the moment. You know, even though we're recovering from the third wave, there's still 150 people in ICU today. There's still over 500 people in hospital with this terrible virus. You know, I'm a doctor by training. I never remember in my experience our ICUs being half full. You know, half the patients in our ICUs at the moment have the one virus, the one illness. That's just never happened before. This is an unprecedented scenario. And we know from the experience, you know, around Christmas and after Christmas, how quickly this virus can make a comeback if we lower our guard. And we can't afford to do that. You know, March has to be all about getting the schools open. So important that we achieve that. Kids need their education. They need to see their friends. They need to be able to develop. And that's why schools and childcare going back in March is the only thing that we're allowing to happen that's any way different to the past couple of weeks. But for that to happen successfully, for us to avoid a significant spike in cases, we need to all double down on the restrictions and continue to work from home, not meet up in groups, try and keep 2 meters away from people, you know, all of those things that do work, and we know they work regardless of what variant.
Do you think people are doing that? Because I wanted to come to this slightly later on, but now that you mention it, do you think people are doing that? Because, you know, in theory, if everyone stayed away from each other for a fortnight, the virus would just cease to exist in Ireland altogether. But evidently, it's not. We've now been in lockdown for 2 months. We're still averaging a pretty high number of cases. Why won't they come down? Is it because lockdown is too loosely defined? Does it permit too many things, or is there not enough adherence to it?
Well, of course, it's not possible for people to stay apart from each other for 2 weeks. You know, a huge amount of the transmission that's happening is in households, and people who live together, share beds, share rooms, obviously can't stay apart. And a lot of the outbreaks as well are happening in hospitals and even now in nursing homes, you know. So, you know, that theory that if everyone stayed apart from everyone else for 2 weeks, that the virus be eliminated, that's an academic theory. It's not a real world one. Anyone would tell you that's not feasible in a society that has hospitals and people live in houses, you know. So, you know, the numbers are coming down, and they're coming down considerably. We saw yesterday, I never like to read too much into one day's figures, but the positivity rate below 4% for the first time since the middle of December. Still going in the right direction. Does seem that we're going in the right direction, slower than we would have liked, but that is probably related to the fact that B.1.1.7 is so much more transmissible.
Is the fact that it's rising or falling so slowly part of the reason why you don't want to set a specific metric that it would take to bring about the relaxing of restrictions?
Yeah, we're not setting a specific metric, and I would have been all for it. You know, 6 months ago, I would have been arguing for it around the table, you know, at the cabinet committee. And, you know, I've come to accept the advice of NPHET and the experts on this. And they say that setting a specific metric is unwise, that you need to take into account a number of factors. And there are four factors we're taking into account: the variants, the virus, the number of cases, particularly as expressed by the R number, and also the state of our hospitals. And, you know, you could have a low number of cases because you're not doing much testing, or you're testing the wrong people. That would be a false low, if you like. You could have high numbers in hospitals, but that could be down to an outbreak in one or two hospitals. So the advice from them is it's not a good idea to pick, you know, one figure.
But if there are four
variables, you actually look at these four or five things in the round.
If there are four of those things that you do have to look at in the round, then why not at least publish targets for all four or five of them? Because right now it does seem like it's an interminable process. We're going to be in it for at least 6 months. We don't know what we're going to have after Easter weekend. We don't know what it's going to take to be allowed to go back to living any kind of lives right now. And maybe it would help people to buckle down and to know what they need to face into if they thought that there was a specific target that we were all looking to.
Well, I think that's exactly why you don't, because there is so much that we don't know about the virus, about how it's changing, about its transmissibility. And say you picked a target, you know, say it's 10, say it's 20, why not 30 or 40? You know, say it's 50 in hospital, why not 40 or 60? You know, any target you're going to pick is going to be fairly arbitrary within a certain band. And that doesn't make sense in our view.
There is a little bit in today's papers about Israel, which of course is far ahead in its vaccination program than anywhere else in the world, and the idea of a green pass, which allows people to avail of services like gyms and cinemas once they're vaccinated. Obviously, that would be a very attractive proposition if it was workable in many countries, and you're the Minister for Enterprise. No doubt you'd like a lot of businesses to be able to open their doors once they thought it was safe to do so. Could we see something similar like that in Ireland in a few months, where those who are vaccinated and who would apparently then pose very little threat to anyone being allowed to go back in and avail of services?
Well, you know, I spend a lot of time looking around the world at what's happening in other countries to see what we can learn. And I think it's right that we should do that. And Israel is definitely one of the countries that we need to pay attention to, particularly because they're the country that's farthest ahead in terms of the vaccine program. You know, over half of their population have received a first dose, about a quarter have received two doses. Notwithstanding that, Gavin, they still have 3,000-4,000 cases being recorded every day, roughly double our population, maybe 2,500 cases a day. Now, they're doing a huge amount of testing. They do about 50,000 tests a day.
They have substantial more mixing among their younger populations as well, and there are more younger people in hospital.
And here's another thing that doesn't come across in debates. They haven't let a non-Israeli into the country since last March. They have very, very strict border controls. And despite that, a year later, they're still having thousands of cases every day. So, you know, it does show to you how difficult this virus is to control once it's become endemic and once it's become prevalent in your society. So
does that mean that it would be a lot harder for Ireland to involve or to introduce some kind of a green card system like that because we are a more ingratiated world and we have to allow people in certain circumstances?
No, what I'm saying is that despite the fact that Israel hasn't let any non-Israeli into the country for the best part of a year, they still have a lot of COVID, you know. So, you know, for anyone who thinks that restrictions on international travel is a panacea, this is an example as to why it isn't.
But about the idea of them having some sort of a green pass where people who have been vaccinated, and it appears now that there's growing evidence they not only are safe from infection themselves or safe from the symptoms of it, but that they don't pass on the virus to others. Could there be a system where those who have been vaccinated are allowed to go back to the gym or the cinema and allow those businesses to open and trade again while everyone else is still waiting?
Yeah, there could be, and by could, I mean could, not will. And that is something we're going to have to examine when we learn more about the experience of Israel as to whether it's worked, as to whether, you know, they're reopening, for example, gyms, restaurants, concert halls, cinemas with the green badge system. You have to have had the vaccine. They do that for two reasons. One, because their view is that it is safe, and secondly, it'll encourage more people to go for the vaccine because they've seen a fall off in interest in people getting vaccinated, believe it or not, in recent weeks. So it's something that we could consider, but I think we can only consider it when we're confident that it's worked in Israel. And this is one of the advantages that we have of actually being able to look ahead and see what other countries do and maybe allow them to make the mistakes. It's too soon for that, though, in Ireland. You know, we still only have a relatively small proportion of the population vaccinated. And bear in mind, even though you're vaccinated, you can still carry the virus in your nose and can still pass it on to other people. So you'd want to have a critical mass of the population vaccinated before you even considered those kind of measures. And by the time we get to that point, which would be sometime, you know, in June, we'll have about half the population, we'll have at least one dose that stage. We'll know whether the experience in Israel has worked out or not. On the plus side, though, I should say that the IT system that we have does allow us to produce a vaccine certificate, both in hard copy and digital. So, you know, we have done
the groundwork to do it, even if you don't decide to go through.
And at European level, there's a discussion as well as to whether we should have a standard European one, which could potentially, at some point in the future, enable controlled travel within the Union.
Just quickly before I ask you about your reflections on the year, and when we kind of zoom out a little bit, that story on the front page of the Business Post today that yourself and Pascal Donoghue are at odds about the idea of a tax break for remote workers. Can you elaborate on that a bit more?
Yeah, no, but Pascal and I aren't at odds. There will be a package in the next budget in October to promote remote working and home working and to help businesses to facilitate that.
It says he has concerns about the emptiness of city centres if you do that.
Yeah, and that's a legitimate concern. You know, we don't want to hollow out our city centres, and we're going to need to reimagine, I think, our city centres as well, so that they're places that people want to live and work in, because it is now going to be possible to work from almost anywhere. We may even have people not working in the state, you know, who currently do, so we have to be concerned about that as well. But I think what you see there in the paper, in fairness, is my officials doing their job, robustly promoting the interests of business and of remote workers in this scenario, and that's what I expect of them, and they were doing their job in pushing that case forward.
It's a year ago this weekend since we learned of the first confirmed case of COVID-19 in the Republic. You were Taoiseach at the time, obviously, and it required you to take some pretty tough decisions in the weeks that followed. How has government changed in the last 12 months as a result of all of this?
Well, it's changed in so many ways, Gavin. Like, I still remember getting that text message from Simon Harris, you know, I was expecting it, you know, wanting to take a call from me, or wanting me to take a call, and I rang him, I said, "You're going to tell me it's the first COVID case, isn't it?" And he said, "Yeah." And I still remember that day, and obviously still remember the decisions we had to take, making that announcement on the steps of the Blair House in DC and running through to St. Patrick's Day and everything we had to do after that. And one thing I always reflect on is on the fact that we're still learning so much about this virus. You know, in the early days, it was a honest debate as to whether there was asymptomatic transmission or not. You know, now we know there definitely is. There was a debate about face masks. There's an ongoing debate about antigen testing, and I think that will come down very much in favor of antigen testing in the next couple of months. So we're still learning a lot. And government has changed. You know, government had to do things that we would never have done before. Huge restrictions on people's civil liberties, forcing businesses to close, but also massive interventions, you know, enormous public spending in health, in education and justice, the pandemic unemployment payment, the wage subsidy scheme, all of those things, which were the right thing to do. Huge spending, huge interventions, but of course financed by borrowing, and that will have that will have consequences into the future.
Is that going to become the new normal, this new sort of bigger state? Because I see a report today, I don't know whether it's from IFAC or one of the think tanks, pointing out that even if you stripped out COVID, you increased spending 5 billion euro in last year's budget, which of course means that whenever taxes do get back to normal, you're going to have to find 5 billion extra to pay for that every year going forward.
I think we will have a bigger state. We were doing that anyway, by the way. You know, public spending has been rising every year now since 2014 or 2015, I think, if not before. So, you know, a bigger state wasn't something that wasn't happening.
You usually have a growing economy every year, which we obviously haven't had for the last 12 months.
We had the biggest capital budget, 10 billion euros investing in public infrastructure around the country. So a bigger state was happening anyway. Obviously happened quicker because of the response to the pandemic. But you're absolutely right. In order to pay for that, you need economic growth. Now, you know, some people, when you ask the question about resources, where do resources come from, they'll always, their instant reaction is, let's look for something to tax and tax it heavier. My instant reaction is a different thing. It's how can we get the economy to grow? Because it is economic growth that actually allows you to generate taxation and revenue and therefore invest in public services and in infrastructure. And that's why a crucial part of my job over the next 2 years in the role I have is to make sure that we have a rapid recovery and the economy does bounce back quickly. We get businesses open, we get people back to work, and we close that deficit through growth, enterprise innovation and employment, and not by having to raise taxes. Okay.
Just before I let you go, you told the Fine Gael Parliamentary Party this week that criticism of government communications was reasonable, heard loud and clear, and will be taken on board. What criticisms? What do you mean by that?
Well, as you know, Fine Gael Parliamentary Party meetings are supposed to be private, but they're not. So I won't insult your intelligence around that. There was some criticism of government messaging last week. Fair criticism, in my view. I think what
criticisms were
Tuesday,
fair?
Well, I think it was all the usual stuff that's been well ventilated in the papers. But what I said,
the fact
to,
that Stephen Donnelly went on TV and said the talks with the unions were still ongoing when they had already wrapped up, and that he threw Josepha Madigan under the bus for suggesting otherwise.
Well, lots of different things, but, you know, I'm not going to get into that. What I said to the Parliamentary Party, which is what I'm going to say to you now, is the launch of the revised plan on Tuesday is the reset. And that plan is really clear, sets out what's going to happen over the next 10 weeks, what is going to happen, and how we're going to defeat this this virus. And now all of us, now that plan is there in black and white, is clear and understandable. All of us, ministers of state, senators, backbench TDs, we all have a responsibility now to communicate that plan and explain it to the public and our constituents rather than talking about our own internal issues.
Predictions obviously make a hostage of fortune to everyone, but a year ago you didn't think we'd be looking at a second St. Patrick's Day behind closed doors. Could we be looking at a third one, or do you think we'll be back to relative normality this time next year?
Well, you know, I've always been a COVID optimist, and I haven't always been right. I have been right a lot of the time, but certainly not always. And, you know, I think that with vaccines, with antigen testing, with better treatments, with a robust test, trace and isolate system, with appropriate controls on international travel, we can get back to a life more normal this summer, and hopefully a very normal life sometime next year. But like I say, this virus keeps surprising us.
Leo Varadkar, thank you very much for joining us this morning. Tánaiste Leo Varadkar, Fine Gael leader and Minister for Enterprise, Trade and Employment. Thank you very much.